"What kind of work do you want me to do?" I asked. What Boris had in mind for me was not a simple task. The number of chores waiting to be taken care of was huge, the single biggest job being the management of Boris's personal assets. Boris had been helping himself to a good 40% of the foodstuffs, clothing, and medical supplies being sent to the camp by Moscow and the International Red Cross, stashing them in secret storehouses and selling them to various takers. He had also been sending off whole trainloads of coal through the black market. There was a chronic shortage of fuel, the demand for it endless. He would bribe railroad workers and the station master, moving trains almost at will for his own profit. Food and money could make the soldiers guarding the trains shut their eyes to what he was doing. Thanks to such business methods, Boris had amassed an amazing fortune. He explained to me that it was ultimately intended as operating capital for the secret police. Our activity, as he called it, required huge sums off the public record, and he was now engaged in procuring those secret funds. But this was a lie. Some of the money may have been finding its way to Moscow, but I was certain that well over half was being transformed into Boris's own personal fortune. As far as I could tell, he was sending the money to foreign bank accounts and buying gold. For some inexplicable reason, he appeared to have complete faith in me. It seems not to have occurred to him that I might leak his secrets to the outside, which I now find very strange. He always treated his fellow Russians and other white men with the utmost suspicion. But towards Mongolians or Japanese, he seemed to feel only the most open-handed trust. Perhaps he assumed that I could do him no harm even if I chose to reveal his secrets. First of all, whom could I reveal them to? Everyone around me was his collaborator or his underling, each with his own tiny share in Boris's huge illegal profits, and the only ones who suffered and died because Boris was diverting their food, clothing, and medicine for his own personal gain were the powerless inmates of the camp. Besides, all mail was censored, and all contact with outsiders was prohibited. And so I became Boris's energetic and faithful private secretary. I completely overhauled his chaotic books and stock records, systemizing and clarifying the flow of goods and money. I created characterized ledgers that showed at a glance the amount and location of any one item and how its price was fluctuating. I compiled a long list of bribe takers and calculated the necessary expenses for each. I worked hard for Boris from morning to night, as a result of which I lost the few friends I had. People thought of me, could not help but think of me, as a despicable human being, a man who had sold out to become Boris's faithful bootlegger. And sadly enough, they probably still think of me that way. Nikolai would no longer speak to me. The two or three other Japanese prisoners of war I had been close to would now turn away when they saw me coming. On the other hand, there were some who tried to approach me when they saw that I had become a favorite of Boris. But I would have nothing to do with them. Thus I became an isolated figure in the camp. Only the support of Boris kept me from being killed. No one could have got away with murdering one of his most prized possessions. People knew how cruel Boris could be. His fame as the man-skinner had reached legendary proportions even here. The more isolated I became, the more Boris came to trust me. He was happy with my efficient, systematic work habits, and he was not stinting in his praise. "You are a very impressive man, Lieutenant Mamiya. Japan will be sure to recover from her post-war chaos as long as there are Japanese like you," My own country is hopeless. It was almost better under the Tsars. At least the Tsar didn't have to strain his empty head over a lot of theory.